Today for Turkmenistan, China is the single dominant gas partner. Already billions of cubic meters of Turkmen gas being exported to China. It will only grow as new pipelines becomes functional. It's not only Turkmenistan. China is one of the most dominant partner for almost all of the Central Asian countries. As of this stage, those partnerships are economic in nature. How it will develop in the future yet remains to be seen. Now the question is, where do we go from here? What are the ultimate scenario for Chinese influence in Central Asia? What are the consequences for the region? To understand this, I need help. To help us, I have Reid Standish from Foreign Policy in Washington, D.C., who has lived in Central Asia. Bruce Panier, editor of Araf Yarel's Kishlak Awazi, the Central Asia blog, is here with me. Bradley James Jardine, Central Asia researcher at Glasgow University. Also, Galim Bokash, editor of our Kazakh service, are joining us in the studio here in Prague. And I am Mohammed Tahir, Director of Turkmenistan Service at Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty. Welcome, gentlemen, to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bradley, you have been collecting some hard facts about China's growing influence in Central Asia in various sectors. Mm-hmm. Please help us to understand where China stands today in the region. Then I open up the floor for the discussion.
Okay, so in 2000, China's trade with Central Asia was around 1 billion. By 2013, this has increased to 50 billion. That same year at Nazarbayev University, China unveiled its regional initiative, the Silk Road Economic Belt. And since then, China's outward direct investment has surpassed its inward investment. A main priority for China has been energy. China's National Petroleum Corporation, using loans from China's state bank, has been developing the Galkanish gas field in Turkmenistan's southeast. China has since become the dominant trade partner for Turkmenistan, with the regime moving dangerously close to complete dependence. Kazakhstan has also witnessed a growth in its demand for energy from China, from its Kashagan oil field offshore from the Caspian. In 2013, China imported more than 86 million barrels from this field. In Tajikistan, China's Line D gas pipeline from Turkmenistan will see transit the country, bringing a $3 billion investment. Furthermore, Tajikistan also shows signs of China's transition from trade partner to a public goods provider, including foreign aid. China's Export-Import Bank is now the largest single creditor to aid-dependent Tajikistan, and in July 2014 it held 41.3% of Tajikistan's external debt, compared with the World Bank, which held only 16.4%. Infrastructure is also crucial. China pledged $40 billion for its new Silk Road Fund to strengthen transport networks. To this end, China has formed the Asian Infrastructure Investment Bank. Kyrgyzstan is key here, since Kyrgyzstan, being the only World Trade Organization member in Central Asia, is a gateway for Chinese products into the markets. To further achieve this, China has proposed China-Kyrgyzstan-Uzbekistan Railway, linking up China with the economies in Central Asia. Kyrgyzstan also provides interesting insight into China's cultural strategy, since China provides scholarships for 1,500 Kyrgyz students. The superpower also funds its Confucius Institutes to promote Mandarin in the region. There's one at the Bishkek Humanities University and the other is at the Kyrgyz National University promoting Mandarin. And also through the SCO, China has offered 50 Mandarin-speaking Kyrgyz students a year studying abroad in China. Finally, Uzbekistan. Trade between Russia and Uzbekistan at the beginning of 2014 amounted to $7 billion, making it the largest trade partner. However, China has been rapidly catching up. In 2014, China's Uzbek trade was only around $800 million, but now stands around $5 billion, according to the Uzbek Ministry of Foreign Affairs. Uzbek Neftgaz has also reported that the amount of gas supplied to China will be increased from $6 billion to $10 billion this year. Despite active economic influence, China still lags behind Russia in terms of cultural expansion in Uzbekistan. So I asked you, what implications do these trends have for the region?
Right. China's growing influence in the region is not limited with only one sector in Central Asia. If its investment dominates Turkmen gas sector, in Tajikistan it's focused on some other fields. So the bottom line is, if you compare the speed of China's increasing investment in the region. It's not comparable with any other regional power, obviously, in Central Asia. You know, obviously, there are economic incentives behind each of these moves by China. Talking about Chinese interest, is there any reason to read it otherwise, Bruce?
I think most people have already, or at least many people have already said that China's main influence in Central Asia is raw materials and resources. Most of the exports being sent eastward to China are, as you mentioned, hydrocarbon products. Uranium, in the case of Kazakhstan, is also another one. And in the mountains of certainly Tajikistan, and I believe to some extent in Kyrgyzstan, China is exploring for rare earths at the moment, too. So a lot of people have looked at Chinese policy in Central Asia as simply being using Central Asia as a resource base to help fuel the Chinese economy.
Ray, what's your take on this? I mean, you have had some numbers, also some Chinese cultural activities in Central Asia. So is there any reason to read Chinese intention other than economy in Central Asia?
It is largely an economic issue for China. The Silk Road project is a foreign policy initiative, definitely. It's also a domestic initiative to build up its western regions, and Central Asia, especially Kazakhstan, is part of that. But if you look at what China is doing in the bigger picture in the Silk Road, you can see Central Asia is very much a launching pad connecting by land China to Europe. So it is still economics, but if we look bigger picture and zoom back, you can see that there is a lot of political aspects to that, whether we're talking domestically in Western China or if we're talking about connecting China to Europe in terms of infrastructure links, roads, railways, and everything.
One of the participants that we have here in Prague, Galim, coming from Kazakhstan, I think you are in a better position to explain us how the Chinese growing influence in your country is seen by Kazakhs, local Kazakhs there.
Of course, they're quite suspicious about any Chinese activities in private sector, in business, especially in Almaty, big urbanized centers. But China is visible everywhere in Kazakhstan. Mm. Actually, they've set new target of $40 billion U.S. dollars trading this year, 2015. Mm. So, and Kazakhstan itself is the second largest trade partner of China among the post-Soviet countries, mm. after Russia, I think. And of course, as said our Washington-based guest, colleague. That Kazakhstan is especially important for China as a corridor, the transit land to connecting Western China, very backward Xinjiang province, to Western Europe. Hmm. The last thing I would say, of course, this oil and gas cooperation is getting more and more visible hmm. and strong. So Chinese, CNPC, I think. Yes. You can see CNPC sign in almost every oblast of Kazakhstan. And stations, oil stations, gas stations, and CNPC. Actually, for China, it was a quite important deal when CNPC bought Kazakh Petroleum, I think, the Soviet-era company, and they said a new level of economic cooperation in that field.
So it is mostly economic activities that China is involved in Kazakhstan?
I would say economic, because business activities are somehow restricted because of the Kazakh side's migration policy.
Mm. You touched this restriction thing. That's interesting. I mean, if China brings money to the region, those countries should be happy. People should be happy. On the other hand, you also see some restrictions, as Galim said, in Kazakhstan, and some kind of resistance by local people against China. Like in Kyrgyzstan, I believe there were some protests against them. Why there's a resistance? Bruce, you
okay, sure. Obviously China, when the Central Asians look eastward, they see this giant neighbor, population 1.23 billion or something. They understand that China could dominate them very easily. Militarily, they're stronger. Population-wise, as I mentioned, much bigger, richer. All kinds of things where the Chinese are surpassed them and this stuff. So they're kind of wary of having too much Chinese influence in the region, because they're afraid that they'll get wiped aside by too much Chinese influence in the region. You know, and you mentioned Kyrgyzstan. Well, that's visible, out there, because The Chinese, there was the gold mining problem, for instance, where they were, it was a gold mining site in Kyrgyzstan. And of course, part of the deals with China are always, you can send your company over here and you can set up shop, but you have to hire locals. But often what we've seen is that at least there's the feeling on the part of the domestic workers that the Chinese workers are being paid more, even though they're doing exactly the same work as the Chinese workers. And this has led to a lot of conflicts in the region. And for the Central Asians who are already wary of Chinese influence, this just reinforces the feeling that they're dealing with not just a big brother, but potentially a big bully, I suppose, is the way to say it. Someone who could just push them aside at a moment's notice after getting what they want. And so it does create a climate of apprehension, I would say. They do like the money. They do want the investment. Generally, the Chinese government treats them publicly very, very well. You know, they do treat them as a respected partner. I wouldn't go so far as to say an equal, because it's obvious to everyone they're not exactly equal, but they treat them with great respect, which isn't always true in the, you know, for Western governments, for instance, democracies, where they're great friendship, great partnerships, should work on your rights situation a little bit. The Chinese don't interfere with domestic politics at all. They try to stay out of it. Yeah. You know, but there still is that fear, like I said, that there's this giant right on their doorstep, and it's, they might be looking for an opportunity to swallow up parts of Central Asia. And we've seen maps that go back that the Chinese produced. Yes, right, that show that huge parts of Kazakhstan and Issyk-Kul and Kyrgyzstan and places like that are actually Chinese traditional lands from more than 1,000 years ago. And this is worrying for a lot of people there.
Bradley, yeah, jump in. Just.
I'd throw in as well about where this money actually goes. So, I mean, Cooley used the metaphor of hardware versus software.
Alexander Cooley, right?
Alexander Cooley, yeah. So, I mean, hardware being the infrastructure, the hard economic avenues, where software being, you know, political reforms. The problem with China's approach is it's focused only on the hardware. So, I mean, this affects where the money goes within the country. Do the citizens actually see any of this money from China's investments? So, I mean, good example was Tajikistan, which the last few years has suffered 60% of its GDP in capital flight. And even with investments from China, which built the Dushanbe-Chinak Highway, you know, toll booths started appearing from these opaque companies which were charging local Tajiks to use it. So, I mean, they weren't even able to use these roads which were built as part of China's infrastructure strategy.
Reid, you lived in Central Asia, in several countries in Central Asia. So what was the general opinion of people about growing Chinese rule in those countries we are lived in? In which way that were visible?
I spent the majority of my time living in Kazakhstan, but I also lived in Kyrgyzstan. In my experiences, there depends who you ask and whose opinion you want to hear about China. If you talk to some people who work in government, maybe some more academics, especially in the last year, there's been a lot of suspicion of Russia's actions, especially in Ukraine, you know, alarmist rhetoric about Kazakhstan not being a state. Some people have been looking eastward a lot more and have been less uneased about what China is doing and the threat that, you know, the potential threat of what China could do. But having said that, I know, like we touched on earlier, there is still a general paranoia of the Chinese in Central Asia as a whole, but especially in Kazakhstan. In Bishkek, you know, it's not uncommon to go around and you'll see that there are little Chinese restaurants, and you can even hear Mandarin sometimes if you go to the right part of town. But again, it's China doesn't have the same type of soft power credibility that a country like Russia or even the United States has in Central Asia. And that's not something that can be built overnight. It's not something that $40 billion in roads and railways can create. It's something that needs to get built over time. And we'll see over the next coming decade probably whether China can translate its economic influence into something more tangible and long-term.
Yes, Bruce.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I just wanted to get in one thing, because there's another detail about this, and certainly this is in Kyrgyzstan. It's something that I've noticed and I've also seen reports about. But at the bazaar level, in the bazaars and stuff, there's been a problem in the last 10 years where Chinese merchants who have permission to come and sell in Central Asia have been able to receive subsidized goods from the Chinese government and come into the bazaars in places in Kyrgyzstan, and I mean even down south in the Fergana Valley. They undersell, or at least their prices are much lower than the local merchants. So they end up putting the local merchants out of business, taking their stalls in the bazaars, and then, of course, they raised their prices. And I know this is true for a fact because I have seen at Chaihanas and places around Central Asia, all of a sudden there's all these Chinese that come and have tea and something to eat in the afternoon, and the locals have complained bitterly to me about this trend, you know, that they've been cut out of business by these Chinese who have shown up and taken over most of the bazaars in some of these places. So, I mean, it's a very low-level, micro-economic thing. Once again, this is one of those things that kind of reinforces the fear about China. I mean, this is just, you know, your average merchant at a bazaar or something like that. But could this be a much bigger thing? Could they possibly eliminate local companies, businesses, and replace them with their own, you know, by underselling them at first, putting them out of business, and then coming and jacking up the price when all of a sudden there's no longer any local competition? So it's just that one example, and I only know it's true for sure in Kyrgyzstan, although I've heard rumors Kazakhstan and Tajikistan, areas closer to the border, this has also happened there.
Right. We have been talking about this local fear or resistance. China's increasing rule also could upset some of the regional powers who have interest in the region, whose interests are at stake because of China's increasing rule. What are those countries and what they are doing about it, Galim?
It's hard to tell you who is the biggest rival of China in terms of economic cooperation, trade cooperation, because China is the big guy there. Yeah. So, you know, there is a mixture of fascination and fear of China among the locals. But some of them, of course, consider Russia as the main rival to China, and less European Union and the United States, because these two powers are too far from the region, and the activity is mainly limited to some cultural exchange programs. And China, especially in this post-Ukrainian period, some Kazakh intelligentsia and some business people, they see China maybe as the new epicenter for political and economic activities and main partner, more stable. But, of course, as I told earlier, there is a mixture of feelings such as fascination and fear.
By local people.
By local people. And because China, you know, we, in 1999, Kazakhstan managed to sign the main agreement about its border with China. But it costed Kazakhstan some price, two big chunks of land in southeastern Kazakhstan were given to China, but not that big land, but small parts of Alakul and Makanchi districts. But everyone still remembers that in Kazakhstan, and China is very persistent in its in pushing its interests, especially in geopolitical terms. In geopolitical, you know, field. So, unfortunately, after the Ukrainian events, many whom I talked to, they see no rivals, actually, to China except Russia in this region.
Bruce, does Russia see China as a rival in the region?
I mean, definitely. You'd have to agree. Russia has always viewed Central Asia as being its backyard, so to speak, for years and years. And I can give you one great example of Russia actually responding to some of these fears. Okay, now we know that economically Russia can't compete with China as far as investment in Central Asia at the moment. But not so many years ago, the Shanghai Cooperation really started emphasizing a security partnership. And China was spearheading that. And there were military exercises that were run with the Shanghai Cooperation Organization involving all the countries, the four in Central Asia that are members, Russia and China. And Russia even started to notice that the Chinese were gaining some military security influence in Central Asia. In the last 5 years, certainly, the CIS, Collective Security Treaty Organization, has really pushed its game forward in Central Asia, you know, way, way past what it was just a few years ago. They had the Kant base in Kyrgyzstan. They had, you know, the bases in Tajikistan for the 201st Russian division, but they've fortified those, they've reinforced them. In the meantime, they've run for every one military exercise that's run within the framework of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, the CSTO runs 10 or 15. Mm. They run them bilaterally with the Central Asians. China does too, but Russia really stepped up its activities as far as military and security in Central Asia. Again, they can't compete with them economically, but the message, although it wasn't, no one ever announced it, but the message was clear that this was Russia's territory to guard, and they did not appreciate the fact that the Chinese were getting too close to some of the Central Asian countries in terms of security and military ties.
Yeah,
it seems as well that Russia's opposed some of China's kind of economic initiatives as well within the framework of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. I mean, during the financial crisis, Russia refused to contribute to the $10 billion emergency anti-crisis fund. And at a 2012 SCO summit, Russia tabled a Chinese-backed initiative to create a regional development bank within the structure of the SCO. So, I mean, Russia seems far more keen to promote its own Eurasian Economic Union and rivalry to this.
Right. How do you see these rivalry to develop in the future between these two powerful countries in the region?
Well, I think that this rivalry is ultimately what's probably going to shape the Central Asia in the coming years. You know, Russia, as much as, you know, I agree with Bruce, I agree with Bradley, I think that they're spot on that, you know, Russia is deeply suspicious of China, but at the same time, Russia also needs China itself. You know, Europe is going to be less and less an energy market for the Russians. They're going to have to sell to China. We already saw the gas deal. You know, the huge gas deal that happened last year. There's probably going to be more to come. China, as much as it consumes Central Asian gas, is also going to be this huge market for Russian gas. So as much as the Russians are going to have to be suspicious and try to do, you know, drag its feet in all these multilateral organizations and flex its muscles in the CSTO wherever it can, its power is a lot limited, especially given last year, or in the last year where we've seen, you know, the energy market change for Russia. Its export market is different now. And also its economic influence has been hammered. Things like migration, that balance is shifting as you're seeing more and more central migrants actually just not go to Russia at all anymore and return back to Central Asia. You know, and Russia is doing its best to, I mean, there are credible security threats in the region, absolutely, but it is also at the same time ramping up some rhetoric to bring in Central Asian governments who are traditionally afraid of things like terrorism to, say, band together under the banner of the CSTO, or at least cooperate with the CSTO to try and stay closer to Russia and avoid, you know, falling solely within Beijing's orbit.
In long term, it sounds to me from the comments that you have had, all of you, that the region is kind of slipping away from Russian domination to Chinese domination in near future.
No, I mean, I would follow up one thing that Reed just brought up, which I thought was the key to this whole what's the future of Central Asia is going to look like, and that's Russia playing up the Islamic threat, the Islamic extremist threat in Central Asia. That if that threat does really happen one day, if there really is a problem with Islamic militancy, extremism in Central Asia, I think at that point China will bow out and Russia would find its end, because it's just the Chinese interest in Central Asia now, accepting the Uyghurs, which of course they don't want any problems with the Uyghurs, but I don't see where the Chinese would actually intervene in a Central Asian security situation that involved Islamic militants, whereas Russia clearly will at that point. And I think that could, if that does happen, that would be the deciding factor on which way Central Asia is going to lean, toward Russia or toward China, because the Chinese at that point would see they would try to protect their economic interests, but they will not send troops to Central Asia, and Russia will.
Obviously, the other question comes to my mind is that if the region is slipping away to Chinese domination, I would clearly ask whether it's a bad or good thing. But before to come to the subject, I again want to raise a few more questions locally about the Chinese activities there. Earlier, Bradley, you were talking about at least in Kyrgyzstan, China is involved in more than economic activities. In fact, they are offering 1,500 scholarships to Kyrgyz students each year. I'm sure similar things are happening in many other Central Asian countries that has nothing to do with the economy. What are those examples? In fact, Galim, you might wish to start.
You mean
non-economic
cultural cooperation with China? Yeah, Confucius centers are functioning in Kazakhstan as well. In all the biggest centers, regional centers, Almaty, Astana, and quite popular. Around 2,000 grants are given by the Chinese government to Kazakh students to study Chinese or anything in China. And Chinese cities like Shanghai or Beijing or Nanking, other cities, they're becoming now very attractive destinations for Kazakh students, young Kazakh students. So I have several friends whose children are studying in China. So in that perspective, China seems to be much more closer than Russia. And, of course, because of the price. Mm. So especially oil and gas studies are getting, it's my personal observation, getting very popular in that technical institute in Beijing Technical Institute. So many high-level top officials' children studied there. Year by year, Chinese universities kind of pushing Russian universities from the way. Mm. And getting more popular. That's one observation.
That's interesting. That's education aspect.
I mean, it really goes across the board. They got their hand in a little bit of everything.
Other than economy.
Economy. Of course, there's the cultural influence. And Galim mentioned some of that. And that's certainly true not just in Kazakhstan, but other places. I'll give you a small example. In the late 1990s, when I was in Central Asia, and I'll use Kyrgyzstan as an example, that was true in a lot of places by the Chinese border. Everyone was studying English because English was the language of the computers. Yeah. You know, so they figured this was their future, and they were all trying to get their English language skills up. When I was back, in 2010, everyone was studying Chinese because they saw that as the future. That was where they were going to find a job, and that was where they were probably going to go, at least to study. They saw themselves as working with a Chinese company, even in Central Asia, if they didn't actually just move to China to work. So, there's that aspect to it, too. For the governments there, the Chinese are the most convenient of allies, because not only don't they interfere with how the Central Asian governments rule their countries, but when in times of crises, when the international community is criticizing some of the actions they did, Andijan, for instance, 2005, Uzbekistan, but it goes beyond that too. The Chinese actually support the governments in Central Asia and say, you did the right thing. So this is it's a friend in need, I suppose you would call him. But I mean, so it's got an attraction on many, many levels. You know, on the local level, for maybe you get money for your family and your house. On the government level, because it's the kind of ally, it not only balances your relations with other superpowers, but they've shown themselves to be there when times are bad and help these governments out.
Right, we spoke about this China's increasing role in education sector of Central Asia. There were examples from Kyrgyzstan and Kazakhstan. What does these signs explains in terms of China's long-term goals in Central Asia?
Well, if I was being optimistic, I would say that these are sort of the early seeds of a Chinese soft power. You know, if you look at what part of Russia's pull in the region is, its history from the Soviet Union and even from Imperial Russia. You have Russian language, you have a shared history, and a common understanding of one another. So that these education things can be sort of the foundations for this bridge that China is going to need if it's going to continue to grow and maintain significant influence in Central Asia. I know, just adding to Bruce's anecdote about the languages, that's something that I often heard living in Kazakhstan, is people would say, if you want to live abroad, study English. If you're going to stay in Kazakhstan, learn Mandarin. And I think that that's ultimately where things are going. And so I would say that these education initiatives, if they can expand and people start to see, like, there is an economic incentive for learning Mandarin. Like we said earlier, you can go work for a telecoms company, you can live in Central Asia and use these language skills to get you an economic advantage, which, if we're looking at the more grassroots local level, that's how you bring people on board, and that's how you eliminate over time this paranoia, which we were touching on earlier.
Is this goal better for the region? I mean, is the Central Asia is better off with being China rather than any other superpower, Bruce?
Well, that's a tough question. You know, as the policy stands right now, I suppose you could argue that maybe the Central Asians would be better off with China just because their interference in the region is minimal, and whereas the Central Asians already know that Russia tends to put its hand in a lot of things and force the issue, pressure governments, pressure locals. Like I said, it's a shared history, but not all of it is a good shared history. So, we kind of have an idea of what being under Russia's thumb looks like and means for Central Asia. We don't know exactly what that means. You know, under Chinese, we were talking before the show, it's been 1,000 years more since there was any serious Chinese influence in the region that's now Central Asia. So we just don't know what would happen if they had a free hand to do as they wished in Central Asia, whereas we do know with Russia. Right now, looking at it, if I was Central Asian and it was a choice of, you know, would you rather have more influence from Russia or China, I would say China, because it's pretty much a beneficial relationship so far. We don't know what the downside of that relationship could be, whereas we do know what the others.
Yeah, Kalim, you are Central Asian, so mm-hmm. In which way you are better off?
Actually, my parents were born in China. They are actually ethnic Kazakhs from Xinjiang.
Yeah.
Actually, yeah. But, of course, it doesn't make me think that China is a better partner. I think China is a better partner for our government in terms of political support during any crisis. For people, China is a very important trade partner, because now if you go to Almaty, I would say 80% of all vegetables, of fruits, everything is imported from China, from Xinjiang. We have clothing, everything, almost everything. Of course, sometimes you can see Russian goods, but China is so visible and so approachable, so easy to talk to negotiate for locals. And, of course, they prefer China. And in cultural life, there is another factor which makes Kazakhstan different from its neighbors, because 2 million ethnic Kazakhs live in Chinese Xinjiang. And during these 25 years, I think more than 500,000 moved to Kazakhstan. Mm-hmm. And among those people, there are so many educated people, specialists, intelligentsia, who, of course, not all of them, but I can see that many of them are sympathizers of China. Mm-hmm. And in delivering that message, that even it's now communist, but communist China is one of its dynasties, so it has much more stable, prosperous political system than Russia itself, which is not predictable, which is not reliable, especially in post-Crimea period. I'm speaking on behalf of some ethnic Kazakhs, of course, but Russian population might have completely different opinion about that. Just to mention, all the young population from North Kazakhstan prefer to study at the Siberian universities, Tomsk, Novosibirsk, Omsk, Tumen. I mentioned about the students studying in China. There, I would say, not most of them, I would say all of them are ethnic Kazakhs. So that's another trend.
Interesting. I also want to add here a positive note of Chinese presence in Central Asia, whether it is Silk Road or the gas project. Whatever Chinese starts, they obviously build it. And then you have seen this gas pipelines from Turkmenistan to China. It goes through several countries. Obviously, it also interconnects economies of some of those Central Asian countries, which otherwise they would not be talking to each other, let alone cooperating in many aspects. So there is also some positive aspects of China coming into that region. What are the other examples, like these kind of positive examples, that China is bringing to that region? Bruce, you want to start?
I just mentioned quickly the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. Mm-hmm. Of course, it ties four of them together. You mentioned the gas pipeline, but specifically pipeline line D is the one that I've always been most interested in, because that's the one, the other three go through Uzbekistan and Kazakhstan, but line D, for no good reason except it brings Tajikistan and Kyrgyzstan into the picture, it goes through Tajikistan and Kyrgyzstan. Economically, logistically, there's no reason to do that at all. But they, just so that Tajikistan and Kyrgyzstan wouldn't feel like they'd been left out of this whole deal, the Chinese routed one of the four pipelines through their territory. You know, so it's got that aspect to it. I mean, the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, and I know that, that you're, of course, from Turkmenistan and you're dealing with that, but the Shanghai Cooperation Organization has really been the Chinese way of getting into Central Asia, and all the economic cooperation we're seeing now is based on what they've been able to do by being a member of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization and the four Central Asian states. And let's remember, before it was actually the SCO, when it was just the Shanghai Five and Uzbekistan wasn't in it, there was a brief period in the late 1990s when they, when that was the focus. They had said at first it was for mutual confidence building measures. They wanted to remove their, that's why the Shanghai Five was cooperating. They were going to move all their troops away from the borders on both sides, the former Soviet Union, Chinese side. That worked so well that the next step was economic cooperation, and that was going to be what the SCO was based on. Chechen War, post 9/11, it's shifted, and it's got much more of a security emphasis to it than it used to. But prior to those events, in 1998, early 1999, that was how China and even Russia saw the future of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization when it was still the Shanghai Five, was that it was going to be an economically based cooperation, and that has been China's vehicle for getting into Central Asia.
Reid, if there is anything, a final word you want to say, otherwise we are going to conclude the discussion here.
Sure, I'll jump in. You know, I just wanted to sort of say that, you know, all of us seem to be in agreement that China is ascending in Central Asia, and that this generally is sort of the trajectory that everything is on there. But at the same time, Russia's not going away, anytime soon. You know, as much as the Eurasian Union is not working out as planned, it still exists. We talk about security threats. Russia still has military bases throughout the region. It's still the main military supplier for many governments. So I think we, as much as I agree that China is probably going to be coming out ahead, the Russians aren't going away anywhere, and we're still yet to see how China can fully translate it. We're seeing the baby steps of how Beijing can go from being this major economic power into a big player on all levels, but we still haven't seen that full force yet, and that's going to be the big thing to watch in the coming decade.
May I put a word?
Sure.
It's very nicely noticed. In military cooperation, China has absolutely no influence in Central Asian countries. So all the Central Asians are equipped by the Russian weapons and the first thing. And, you know, recently when Kazakhstan offered its Atlas-Valashenko pipeline to deliver Russian gas to China, Russia refused to use it. And now instead they're building this costly new pipeline to China, you know, avoiding strategic partners, ready-made pipeline. So Russia pursues all the time, Russia pursues its own interest, and Russia's presence in Kazakhstan is huge. And I would say Kazakhstan also is itself trying to restrict putting some restrictions to migration from China, and by making it more difficult issuing, business visas for Chinese people. And that's why I think there is no Chinatown in Almaty yet.
Yet. Okay. With that note, we have to conclude our discussion here. It has been fascinating debate. Thank you very much for being part of the panel. Reid Standish from Foreign Policy in Washington, D.C., here in the studio, Prague, Bruce Panier, editor of Kishlak Avazi, Galim Bokash, editor of Kazakh Service, and also a guest speaker from Glasgow University in Scotland, Bradley James Jardine. Thank you very much for being part of the discussion today, gentlemen.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Thanks a lot.